we're going to open now for a time of questions for any brothers in the audience. Just raise your hand, and Landon will bring you the microphone, and we'll get to your question. We'll start with Alan Bonavay in the back.
I enjoyed your talk, Nate, and I think, of course, like you said, this is a very important passage. Back in verse 2, where it says, "He shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of dry ground," if I was following you correctly, you seem to apply this to the situation Jesus was in among the Romans or the nations. I wonder if this is not the dry ground here is not the dry ground of Judaism, and particularly the Messianic, the Solomonic line, because the Solomonic line ends with what's the last king's name?
Jeconiah.
Thank you. And he says, in Jeremiah says, "Write this man childless, and there shall be write this man childless, a man shall not prosper in his days, for none of his descendants prosper sitting on the throne of David and ruling in Judah." And so the line of David through Solomon ends. And this is also the picture of the tender shoot or coming up out of the stump of the Solomonic line. And so it looks to me like maybe this is a reference to the dry ground of Judaism, meaning the Jews were expecting a return of a Solomonic king, a king like Solomon, or a king like David. And Jesus was of the line of David. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1 makes that clear. But he was of the line of David through Nathan. And Mary's genealogy in Luke chapter 3 is of the line of Nathan, and she was his biological mother. So he's the biological descendant of David, all right. But this is the tender shoot idea coming up out of the stump that was apparently destroyed because of Jeconiah and the previous king's sins. I just wondered if you'd thought of that.
Those are interesting comments. I had not tied this specifically to Jeremiah's prophecy or to the situation of the king can't come from Solomon, and yet that would, of course, be the legal... Solomon's line is who had the legal right to the throne, but the Messiah couldn't come from that. So like you described, we have the genealogies that show to us how Jesus fulfills that. I hadn't tied that to this specific prophecy here or back in Isaiah chapter 11 either. The way I've read in several commentaries and what I kind of came to the conclusion of in Isaiah 11, the stump of David or the stump of Jesse, by the time Jesus comes, the throne of David looks like it's all but destroyed. And Isaiah uses the symbolism of trees and forests or stumps multiple times throughout his prophecy. And it looks, for all intents and purposes, that the line of David is over, that it's done. Now, I haven't tied that before to the prophecy that you mentioned. That's an interesting idea. But I think even with that or without it, for all intents and purposes, it looked like the throne was gone. No one was going to sit upon the throne of David. And yet Jesus did, not physically, but in the truest fulfillment of the prophecy, that the throne would be established forever. And I might not have explained what I was thinking there. I don't think it was just Romanism. I think it was the political and the religious climate of Judaism at the time. Things were about as bleak as they could be when Jesus came, with Roman oppression and the way that that was going, but also with the terrible situation of Sadducees and Pharisees and Zealots and Herodians and all the other religious factionalism that was decimating true Judaism. It was a terrible scenario. And when you look at the way they responded to Jesus, the Sadducees and the Pharisees had no desire for Jesus to come as the Messiah. They had no desire for the true Messiah. And so that is a very, very dry ground indeed. And yet out of that, Christ, of course, still flourished and accomplished. That's the way I've taken it thus far, but I do think that's a very, tying it to that other prophecy is very interesting. I'd have to look at that a little more. So I appreciate you bringing that.
Well, I just want to say that Joseph is Jesus' legal father. He is not his biological father. And Joseph is of the line of David through Solomon. But Mary, his biological mother, is of the line of David through Nathan. And I don't think you could have much drier ground.
Yeah, that's very dry ground.
Okay, Clint, up here in the front with the question.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I don't think you got to address the passage that said he was numbered with the transgressors. There are two New Testament passages that say that was fulfilled in two different events. In Luke 22:37, it says it was fulfilled when the disciples had a sword. And in Mark 15:27-28, it says it was fulfilled when he was crucified between two malefactors. And so I wonder how you can explain how it could be fulfilled in those two distinct events. And you get obviously the difficulty there.
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to answer it with justice. I think that it is interesting that it mentions it a couple of times. He says that he was numbered with the transgressors and he bore the sin of many and he made intercession for the transgressors. So that idea of numbering with the transgressors and making intercession for the transgressors is repeated at least twice. Obviously, I would say, you know, I couldn't argue with either of the gospel accounts. I think that when the gospels teach us that there is a fulfillment of prophecy, then of course that was the correct fulfillment of prophecy. But that is an interesting prophecy nonetheless, because even at the most basic sense, as Mark points out, that he was numbered with the transgressors, he was hung between two thieves, and he took the place of Barabbas, who I think was probably the leader of that group he was supposed to be crucified that day. Jesus took his place, and for intents and purposes, he was killed as the king of the Jews, and numbered with those transgressors that were there. So very literally, he had been numbered with the transgressors. But also, as we saw in other passages, he bore our sins. And that's what Isaiah references ultimately. He bore the sin of many. And that's how he makes the intercession for the transgressors. So there's a very specific sense that Mark applies it. And I admit I haven't looked very closely at Luke 22, verse 37. So I'm hesitant to say too much about that passage specifically right now, but it does seem that there is a true literal sense, but also, of course, in that there is the very generic sense that because he was hung on the cross for our sins and faced the chastisement of God for us, he was numbered as a transgressor, and that's how he would be able to make intercession for all of us. And if you have further insight in Luke 22:37, like I said, I'm not prepared to say much about that, so I'd be interested to hear.